Thank you.
Can you show where the phone is from the board office?
Yes, it's up.
So whenever Mr. Gene comes, pops in there, you just allow him. Mr. Chairman, again, it's Gene.
I got a squad boy.
Yep.
Unmute him.
Sure. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
I'll call this workshop to order.
Our most Congress and Father Rasty, they will support the making decisions for the county and everything we do is in the betterment of all communities. We say this humbly in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Leon, it's all yours.
All right. We got a couple of talking points here, and the first one is the environmental treatment area. The go back to the LDRs and you read that. I'm going to read it to you so that everybody understands what we're talking about. Districts and intent. The ESA category includes four zone districts, ESA 1, 2, 3, and 4. Land in these districts are considered in need of special planning and treatment regarding land development regulation. These are not preservation districts. The land uses permitted within these districts are provided mitigation measures to protect the natural functions of the county's environmental sensitive areas as designated within the comprehensive plan as regionally significant areas with special emphasis on the planning and treatment of the land development within the 100-year floodplain of the Suwannee River, Sinanchan River, Lower Suwannee National Wildlife Refuge, limestone salt marshes within the county, freshwater marshes within the county, and have direct sheet flow to the salt marshes. Suwannee Natural Area as identified in the comp plan and the Mallory Swamp as identified in the comp plan. These regulations prohibit intensive residential, recreational, agricultural uses and prohibit industrial and non-water dependent commercial development within the 100-year floodplain of the areas that is ESA environmental sensitive areas. Lands located within the Suwannee River Corridor, Steenhatchee River Corridor, salt marshes, freshwater marshes, with direct sheet flow to the salt marshes, the Suwannee Natural Areas and the Mallory Swamp, as identified above, are not shown to be within the floodplain, are areas as designated by the flood insurance rate map for the unincorporated areas of the county dated November 2, 1983, are not designated as environmental sensitive areas. Therefore, these lands shall be considered to be agriculturally zoned land, which shall comply with the density requirements for the environmental sensitive area district within which the land is shown to be located on the zoning atlas. Further, these non-floodplain lands shall comply with all requirements of Section 4.4 Title Agricultural Districts found within these land development regulations. Third. We have these big areas that are blocked out on the maps, ESAs 1, 2, 3s, and 4s. But we also have agricultural zonings 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. So automatically you got a conflict right there because you have an extra zoning district in the ag zoning. If it's not within the floodplains of it, then it's technically viewed as an agricultural piece of property. This should have been an overlay. It should have been classified as ag property with ESA zoning on it. But in 1990, they couldn't do that. They could, but few local counties couldn't do that. And that's what we're here to talk about is we want to go down and explore what the intent of this was. And is it Gene on there?
You what now? Where's Jane?
Unmute yourself.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes, sir. We can hear you.
Okay, good.
I was able to hear what Leon would give you an explanation of what the issue was. We can actually make, I gave him some information where we could essentially, without changing in the entitlements, make this more understandable by treating the environmental service areas as overlays. Could be done without changing the entitlement on any of the properties. It essentially recognizes that it functions as an overlay where it presently exists. There may need to be some work with the maps themselves. The reference is to the 1983 version of floodplains, and that certainly we have certainly copies of the current versions of that, but some clarity of that may need to be addressed. But the changes I have provided for you to take a look at would not require that on it. And just to clarify what defines the floodplains, this goes to a bit of a question of land regulations being reasonably understandable, and an individual property owner should be able to, without a great deal of difficulty, be able to know what regulations apply to their properties so there's some reasonable understanding of that. And I think this one is ambiguous in that regard and needs to be clarified. And I think it makes more sense if you recognize that the environmental service areas are actually environmentally sensitive areas that are actually overlays in the way the code is crafted. And the recommendation I made would simply change that to a form that makes more sense and more understandable. Hello?
Yeah. Yes, we can hear you.
Okay.
The printouts that you've sent to me in the PDF. Each
commissioner,
yes. Legal has it, and the county manager has it as well. So there was a reference to any of those if you want to confirm that they have them. And I guess before we go any further, does everybody understand what the intent was when they made this environmental sensitive area? So there's
the environmental sensitive area is actually classified as ag and both, because I've got a RV exemption coming up. I'm purchased landing on the river on one of those tiny lots, and it's ag on my bank.
Well, no, now what the property appraiser has versus our zoning map is two different
things. Okay.
They might classify it as anything. They don't look at our zoning map. So when you pull up the property appraiser site, there's no telling what it shows. That's just how they're basing the taxes on it.
Okay.
If it's on the river down there, it's going to be an ESA. There's not a doubt in my mind. They're within the floodplain. Yeah, it's going to be an ESA. But now, let's say, for example, like John Melvin and his property up there on the top of the hill, even though from 349 to the river is all classified as ESA. They're not in the flood zone or flood plain or nothing. It's all high and dry. So those properties are technically ag properties, and they go back to the original ag classification. Whereas if you pull it up now on the zoning map and you just look at it, it just says ESA. So when you look at the permitted uses, your permitted uses are right here, but you don't know that, hey, you're not classified as ESA, you're classified as ag, you're going to look in a different use category. So it helps to bring some understanding to the map, because it's kind of complicated right there. You have to be familiar with it to navigate through. And it just, I think it goes back to 1989. And nobody stepped up to the plate to say, hey, you essentially don't need to have the ESA 1, 2, 3, 4s, you just need an ESA classification on that ag
period.
District. You see what I'm saying?
All you need is one.
Yeah, the restrictions are there to call this an environmental sensitive area. It's no different than the wetland overlay. You know, you have wetlands, we know how to treat wetlands. You have ESA zoning, then you know how to treat that. But that's why we need to talk about it.
So if there's a piece of property in Gina that has a field, so it's technically how you classify it, that is now considered ag, so would that bring the density? Because right now ESA is 40, 10, and 5.
No, it goes back to that zoning district, even though it meets the density of that. And that's what it says right here is the properties identified as above, the ones with the ESA sheet flow that are not shown to be within the floodplains or designated by the flood insurance rate map for the unincorporated areas are not designated as environmental sensitive. Therefore, these lands to be considered agriculturally zoned land and comply with the density requirements of the ESA area district.
So the zoning, the density will not change?
Correct.
Okay, because my only fear is, because when we had storms a couple years ago with all that flooding, you've been to my house, yeah. We had built. So we built our house on hill, and I think, Mr. Chairman, you kind of had the same story, where I was protected. I didn't have flooding, but all three of my driveways were underwater, so I could not leave. So that's why I was just worried, because we're on the coastline, ESA protects us in that sense, because, you know, we have Bow Lakes and we have Regina Road, which both
flood. Yeah, in your area, you're going to have direct sheet flow to marshes.
Right. That's why we had flooding, is because of everyone else that came to us.
So there's a bunch of ESA zoning in the other areas, and we touched base on this through the solar farm order. We went through this previously. A little bit with the planning council because they didn't want to allow solar farms in the ESA. And we understand they're not going to put solar farms because we're in the swamps. We understand that. But there is a lot of problems there that can't have that. That's why when we went and done that, we went back and forth with it. And I don't think that the planning council has gotten a lot into what it is, and you know, they didn't get back and really view it as an overlay, and it should be. But it's my job to bring it to you, show you what it is. Your job to talk about a vote on it, let me know which way to go with it.
Give me a background. What is CSP, the dark green?
Conservation lands, I'm pretty sure.
Is that what that is?
That's your conservation zone. Those are publicly owned lands or publicly restricted lands.
Federal,
state, water management lands.
Okay.
Yes.
There isn't any benefit, you know, to keep it separated, essentially, correct? I mean,
not really.
It adds confusion.
That's what I was...
It adds confusion. That's what it does. And I think
looking at this, though, really, the recommended zoning versus the current zoning, nothing really changes other than combination of the
right.
Two. Right?
That's correct. It helps to clarify the application of the standard and rather than being duplicative.
Right, but that's like the minimum lot area and the minimum lot width and all this stays the same.
That's correct. And it's the same now, and it remains the same.
Yeah, all you're doing is just combining them together for one zoning question.
Period. Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
what's next?
Go with the overlay district?
Well, we can't make a motion to do it now, but my recommendation is
to simplify it.
And plus, we bought the overlay software and all, right? So, might as well use it.
Yep, go ahead.
How can regular citizens state your name? So, when we're done, we're going to do these maps. They're available right now online, but we're going to have some much cooler maps. And my goal is to have the GIS data available for you to access it. Anybody can access it. Their parcel information along with the LIDAR information. There's ways of doing it. We have this whole program that we purchased. So we can do a published map with a website. I've been studying this book for 5 years, and we're on this cross. You studied it extensively too, I'm sure. And this book was not designed for somebody to pick up and read it from the back and understand it. So we've done it. The hope and the goal is that you can do that.
If we go with this overlapping way he suggests we do, would that help you in the process of helping our citizens with the paperwork and all that?
It helps that citizen
to understand better.
Okay.
Easier.
And
no matter what, but it's it helps. I guess it does help because then if they can research it themselves, it takes some strain off of our office.
I think it takes more strain off me and help you.
As I mentioned earlier, that what's in these tax records is not the same as something that I think it should be the same on record.
So that is a separate office from our office. We can dictate how they run their office.
Well, but if a person is researching what their property is, whether it falls under the
So we have a bunch of people who go to the appraiser's office. They look at it. It's on 19. They say, oh, I'm zoned commercial. And a good case in point was here recently, the Davis Auto Body Shop.
It should have been classified
from the get-go when the office max in 1900. But you go to work and they were on there.
Property don't necessarily mean that their commercial zoning is going to fit whatever business they want to put there too. So there's all kind of different commercial zonings also.
Yeah.
So you best go through building and zone.
The ultimate goal here is
on these zoning districts, there was two bills that passed the Senate and the House on low-income housing. Is there special areas that low-income housing can go, or if it can go anywhere that you permit? Because according to these things that I'm reading in here, on this, if you're doing low-income housing and you have so many units, 30% on some of them and 40% on the other, it doesn't matter if the land's industrial, commercial, or residential, agricultural, whatever, the county cannot tell them the zitsy or the height on how many units they can put in.
So this is... Yes, we can tell them the density. Yes, we can tell them the height. Because lacking service.
That don't have nothing to do with zoning.
And it doesn't have nothing to do with zoning. You're absolutely 100% correct on that. Now, they could go in there, and I understand if you don't want growth, then it's a double-edged sword. You can put in city sewer, and you can put in city water, because that's the areas that are going to be targeted for those bills right there. They got to have 70-plus units, and in one of them that I read, you can't get 70 units in some of the areas. And they're not going to buy a 50-acre tract right there just to put 70 places in there for low income. Not today. Now, that's what a comp plan is. It's you plan for growth. You know, you're ordered in by law, you got to plan for growth. How you plan for it is up to you and where it's best for you. I don't have answers for that. It is Florida.
It says on here at least 40 units, for housing. Local government cannot regulate use, density, height of any affordable housing development and proposed rental projects. And they are getting 75% reduction on taxes. So if we can't do something with this, then, I mean, some of these go in on the different tax side, it's going to be detrimental to the county. But I was reading in here somewhere that it stated, I didn't know what kind of, what we can actually do with this.
Part of that right there, I would guess legal review. Maybe an expert.
Thanks for going.
Maybe an expert in real estate. That might be the way I keep that feeling that away. That's not a Leon.
And it says we can't even require for a zoning change. Variances or comp plan amendments for use.
But it's not been signed
by the government. It's somehow the House and the Senate.
I understand. But that's...
Ladder trucks for fire trucks.
I mean, I don't think they're going to go to the housing. Gina.
I don't think so.
You know, it's, you got up here in Cross City, maybe.
I think it's more of an outlaw than you're thinking, because I've just, I've got a couple of houses that that I'm trying to get fixed up to rent out. I bet I get 8 to 9 calls of people hunting places to rent a week. There is none. But anyway, I just was wondering how this would affect what we're doing here, what, or is there anything we can do to try to prepare for this?
Okay. What do we got to do to move forward with this now on your end?
I just need to know in this direction.
Simplify.
I think
make it simple.
Okay.
We'll
see.
Yeah, we can't get him.
Yeah, no,
we all understand that.
If we all are understanding that we do want to simplify, then okay. The second, I got some bulletin points right here I want to talk about, was the setbacks to the canal. So we have a... Most of y'all know that I just worked with Horseshoe on the same subject matter. The man-made canals, we're not talking about the Gulf, we're not talking about the Swan River, we're talking about the man-made canals, more particular around, you got some there in Hinton Landing area, and you got some down in, of course, the Parks District there in this morning. Everybody wants to reduce the rear setbacks to that because they want to build cook sheds or whatever they want to build. The lot lines are set up and established for fire code primarily. It goes all the way back to the colonial days. You have so many non-conforming lots there now that with granted variances or exceptions or whatever through the years. My suggestion is on the canal, reduce the lot lines on the rear setbacks. That cleans up a whole bunch of non-conformity, and it prevents, now, that doesn't mean that they're going to be able to build a house right up to the tree wall. They have to have some engineering, you know, in those clear spaces back from the tree wall, but that has no bearing on the shed, or if they're going to build their boathouse, or a boathouse over to the edge of the air for a fishing station. There's so many of that already there, and, but when you get down to it, not a legal performance item. So, I guess, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, since probably most of that's in Swanee, I don't have an issue with it. I think it's smart to do that, to be honest about it. Keep our off the highway right away, keep it the way it is, keep our sides the way it is. Put the back, I don't see where we should keep that way. I don't agree with that. I mean, 99% of them has to come to you. They have to pay a fee, and we have to do all the work, blah, 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 blah. As long as their side setbacks is good, let them do what they want to do.
Yep.
Even the residents?
What were we talking about?
The residents all the way back to you.
Yeah. Depends on the property.
Yeah, now, that would require engineering analysis to have a clear span back.
Can't
put a bunch of weight
around it. Right.
But if they go in and drive pylons down, they
but you still got to submit your stuff and the whole process, but you don't have to file for a variance back there. That don't make no sense to do that.
I don't know about the lots in Swanee, but I know about that lot. I got Horseshoe that's 830 foot, but I'm paying taxes on buying a house that's in the ditch. Mine goes all the way across from Texas. It's such as the guy next to me stops. And if it was all closed in. So, I mean, one of the 20 probably the same way. They got a lot of property that they can't
pay
taxes on.
Horseshoes more than 20.
Yeah,
you're right.
So,
well, Horseshoes, if I'm recalling it, their property lines run to the
center of the
house.
It depends on how it goes. Mine goes all the way across. But yes, he was.
So
that is your grievance today, but then, because we all know in 1933 that Horseshoe had no canals, I have the original plat for that, and so when they come in there to develop that, you know, it should have been viewed and vetted and went through there and all that thing corrected. It wasn't done correctly. And so your problems from your past are going forward.
What we fix on the day?
I can tell you something. maybe I shouldn't say this, but we're in a workshop and we don't have a lot of people here, so but we're going to have some minutes of it. But you know, the older people who used to run our county, they did not want a lot of growth. And I commend them for that. I really and truly I do. That's probably what kept us the way we are now today in 2023. Yes, and kept our sand that stead. But they need to be commended for some of the stuff they did not do. And because this could be a Key West right now. This could be a Daytona Beach. I mean, it could be that bad right now. And thank God we do have to jump through some of these holes and try to fix some of this stuff. And it's not a, it is a headache, but there again, it has stunted our growth somewhat, which is good and bad, especially whenever Dwayne's trying to balance the budget. But at the end of the day, that's what kept us whole for a long, long time.
You're absolutely correct on that. The third item that I wanted to talk about was the bench. So when we get done cleaning up our LDRs, we have to start looking at the bench. And those have legal consequences, and those need to be Mr. Gene, do you want to explain that maybe better?
Are you talking about the hearing officer question here?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, typically in code enforcement and in variances and so forth, these are decisions that are assigned to a board of adjustment or to a code enforcement board. These are very legalized kinds of decisions. They don't involve the same discretion that you have with rezonings and other things that you do. They are supposed to meet a very strict set of guidelines. One of the, you've already taken some steps to involve a hearing officer to make those kinds of decisions rather than going to a board. And I think that's a very good technique for making these types of decisions, because essentially you have a judge for all practical purposes who is making these decisions, and they will generally follow the rules of law related to them much much more closely than boards do that are boards of adjustment typically do. I've had some experience with it in using hearing officers for this very type of thing, and it's a very good technique. And you're already looking at doing that with some of your with code enforcement issues, and you could expand it into some of the land development code issues, of notably variances. And again, looking just for direction from you, whether we would want to structure the code that way.
So I know, since I've been here, that we've had citizens do things wrong purposely, and then turn around and say, "I'll just get a variance for it." And I know it puts the board in a very hard position, because, oh, what they've done might look nice, might, you know, be nice, but they didn't follow the rules, they didn't do what they're supposed to do. You have friction right there. You can remove that from your world and put that over on the hearing officer, and then that will be brought before them and have a legal ruling on that. Or if they propose that they want to do something and they want to go outside of what is allowed, then you have a legal ruling on it. Obviously, any grievances can be brought before the board, but then you have the legal side of it for your decision. Okay? Lawyers telling you, no, that's not a good thing to do. You know, you deny this and you override it. That's
on us.
Yeah, it's on you. And something you kind of need to think about and see is, I think as we move forward, this might become more important in the future to have these types of items go before some
someone who's more familiar with this and understands the legal repercussions of it. And it doesn't put you in a don't put you in a political spot. You know, it removes that from you. You don't kick it to another board for them to be put in a bad spot. It goes before, it's the rules of the rules. They're written down. If it's there, if it's allowed, it's allowed. If it's not, it's not. And that is what it is. Y'all know.
Okay.
But.
Ms. Lentz.
That's a good one.
What's the difference in what we're doing right now? I mean, we got the magistrate and basically.
Marriage has come before this board. When we set up the land development board, it will go to them. So it gives them more headache, whereas the variances won't go. I'm pointing this away because I know Ms. Ross is identified to be on it. But it won't go far. I'm sorry.
I'm talking about two different things. I thought we were still talking about code enforcement with the magistrate.
No, code enforcement.
But if you're talking about the variance where they built something and then asked for forgiveness later, yes, I understand what you're saying there. And I agree with that.
Or if they're applying, like tonight, you would have one, we've tabled it. I've asked for it to be tabled because I found something that's incorrect on it. But that would go before a hearing officer. They would review it and say, yes, this is a legal request. We grant it. It wouldn't even have to come before you.
Right.
Like, his written response would generate us to go right into permitting.
But with that being said, that ball rolling, too, you've got, we're putting that together. You're talking to the people about training and all that. So what else do we need to put in place? Or
everything is there.
I thought it was.
If we want to use this as an option, we already have a magistrate. We already have a hearing officer. We use them for code enforcement. We just add variances to the document. Because ultimately, what we should do is...
That would streamline and speed up the permitting process for someone to get something built, so to speak.
Not really,
because you don't get the same amount coming in.
If they're wanting to get a variance, if they want to ask for that, you would just have a legal determination ahead of time if it had to come before you.
But it would also still be the advertisement, still be the same amount of time in the paper, but it actually could slow it down a little bit because that board is probably going to only meet 12 times a year once, where we meet 24 times a year.
Right.
So it could possibly slow it down a tad bit, but...
1 week at most.
Well, there again, I mean, like,
because my thought is to have that board meet the week in between the two commissioner meetings. So if there's anything that we need to talk about at that board meeting, we can. If there's anything that we need to bring to the board, like resolutions, ordinances, or anything out of that, we can bring it to you on the night meeting. And so... that's my thought on how that should be structured and keep it a structured day. You know, we have, you know, our board meetings set. We know what they are. Meaning we just pick the calendar, we tell you those 2 days right there. Have it set up just the same way. But
would there be an appeal process to like say it like his decision, then it still goes in front of the tax commissioner?
And that's the same way with y'all's board.
So it can still be an aggravation of that.
They would have...
depends on how good a job y'all did.
let's say if something came before the land planning board here, the citizens, and they stated no to it, you know, or they had a lot of opposition and, you know, it didn't pass at that level right there. They could file a grievance and bring it before commissioners and... ultimately, it'd be nice because they had their meeting, and in one more week, they can come back and see you if they had a grievance. You will have the ruling of the citizen panel or the magistrate's ruling in front of you so that you'll know ahead of time. It'd be on your docket. You would know that probably the next day that, hey, you've got this coming down the pipeline.
We'd have a lot more credible information to make a determination on what these
are. Correct. Or they might realize... hey,
I need to go back and edit what I'm wanting to do or change how I'm going to present it. I think it gives you a cushion protection around you. But my job to present the idea to you, you like it, that's up to you.
We'll talk more about this tonight in the meeting.
Oh, I won't be here.
Okay.
Tonight is my anniversary.
Oh, well, you don't need to have the anniversary.
I'm
going to
spend it with you guys.
That's okay. I don't play.
Come on, man.
21 years.
Hey.
Goodness. Yeah. You need to go enjoy it.
We built our house.
Wow. He has strong hair.
I think that would be beneficial. I do. I mean, because we go before them, you get discussed, and then when it did come to us, we have a lot more information on what's being proposed and what's going on. If it had to be a grievance or whatever, we'd have, instead of us running around at the last minute asking if these people got objections and trying to figure it out in different things.
Here's the thing. I'm not trying to say what I'm out here, but you have more important things to worry about.
Can you folks still hear me? This is Gene Bowles.
Yeah.
You can hear
some of your time. Mr. Gene, yes, we can hear you.
Yes. Let me say that you can treat this kind of situation where you have the hearing officer makes a determination that can then be appealed to the Board of Adjustment, which would be, in your case, probably the County Commission acting as a Board of Adjustment. In experience that I've had with this in much larger jurisdictions, but where we use the hearing officer, you almost never got an appeal. That doesn't mean you won't get that in Dixie County, but it's just to point out that in its actual operation, because they operate, the hearing officer will operate within strict legal guidelines. And that rarely, when that occurs, that has rarely been appealed in my experience.
Well, you will remove
crosshairs.
Well, you'll remove some of the theatrical events that we've had at some of the commission meetings.
The one question I have about this is, if Joe Blows went down this morning and built a nice thing. I'll just use an example I run into in, I think, 2010. We had a house built down there, very nice place, very well built, no engineer drawings, no permits, no nothing, period. They just built it with power. They lived in it, a nice place, very nice place. And FEMA come in and said, there's no permits on this, there's no nothing on this. You either tear this house down because it was built without proper permits, or we do not do no FEMA assistance in Dixie County. Period. So I always say my 20 children, it was for me to go and tell them the only choice you have is to tear this house down because I'm not jeopardizing this whole county. So I talked to the FEMA people, and they actually agreed to leave our FEMA assistant alone as long as they signed off that they will never have a FEMA claim on this, and then they turned the no permitting back to the county. So I went down and I was able to give them two choices. You sign this paper, you tear your house down. So now with this board that you're talking about, any of them type of situations, where does that go?
So we have to talk about it because that's a whole other realm in today's world.
Mm-hmm.
FEMA has changed a bunch of their rules on that. And what you're talking about is called a 1316. It's a sanction that they remove that from the floodplain ordinance, which means the floodplain ordinance is basically our flood insurance policy. And if you think about it like an auto policy, everybody is on the same policy. So if they 1316 that and sanction that piece of property, it's removed from flood insurance program. It can no longer have flood insurance, which means it can't have any federally backed money borrowed or lended or anything associated with it. What you had was you had places down in Miami, Key West that said, hey, we don't care. You know, you had big dollar places, and that's what they wanted to do. Inland has come back, and they don't hardly allow that anymore. And I know the exact piece of property you're talking about. It's one on our list, and should be two on our list, but the that is – so, yes, that would go back through – if the rules are the rules, that's what the rules are.
Who would hear this? Would that come before the board, or would this other board hear this? And maybe that was a little bit elaborate, but they have a violation, a setback violation, they build on it anyway, then they come to you and say, hey, I just need a variance.
Yeah, no. So
where does that go?
Just like we had that occurred right after I got hired when the man that built the house up on the river.
It got torn down.
And that's where I'm at. It's the rules of the rules. Mercy to the guilty, cruelty to the innocent. That's the rule.
Now, my mind's running, but I mean, liability-wise, say, they did this ruling on that house. Yeah. They did that ruling on the house, and the county accepted that, and they sold that house to somebody, and then something happened to the house, it fell apart, or something happened, somebody got hurt. And the county could be sued for allowing them to build a house without permits, allowing that to go forth. How is that?
Everybody knows my stance on it. I don't allow it. If it's non-permitted, they get a host that it don't make it on the radar because we have power to it.
But I mean, litigation-wise, how would the county stand if something happened?
You don't get involved, so they bring you all the engineering documents, they bring you everything, and that you can meet or exceed the code. And if it's a, but this isn't, so we've kind of gotten a little bit off track right here because
I got
that's more of a code enforcement processing issue where, like, these variance requests or people are just like, hey, you know, I want, well, we have it all the time. They want a bigger boathouse. You know, they want to put, their property might be 50 feet long. They want a 45-foot deck. Well, you have to look at it and you have to say, can I know that person or whatever, whatever, whatever. But you grant that, they're approved for that, but now this other person can't get their boat in because now it's encroaching in on the setbacks. Whereas you say the variance isn't because you want something. The variance is because of the unique situation you need to have this rule, you know, modified.
I got you on that. I'm just still bothering me on the other side of that. If we know something's illegal and they got power and we allow that to happen, then we ain't no better than the ones that are doing illegal stuff. If they build a house without permits and it's got power and we let it go forth, I mean, that's on us. That's shame on me.
So, Mr. Dean, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes.
And it was 27% of Dixie County was not in a flood-designated area. Is that what we determined?
Yeah, roughly. 27% is not in the 100-year floodplain.
Yeah, so
the rest is.
County is not got any kind of flood zone designation on it. So the other 70-plus percent by the floodplain ordinance from FEMA, as far as permitting, no matter what they do, any development part of it. It has way better enforcement on it than some of the others, but you wasn't here previously on the enforcement up there, but you know about it. It's not there. I hate it for them.
I had to do one in Lafayette County that they called me about. They built a house on the river, and as long as the people, they done some kind of deal, as long as those people lived in it, they could stay there. But once they sold the property, it had to be torn down. And when they sold it to the water management, I had to go up there and tear the house down. Because it was built too close to the river.
Well, actually, I tell you that. We had
and it was a permitted.
Yeah. There in Tallahassee.
Yeah.
She worked for a senator and informed me that. Like, it got ugly.
It is. I remember that. Yeah, I remember that one.
I don't mind having the argument. The rule is the rule.
And her husband works for a pretty powerful company around here, too.
Oh, yeah. That got interesting.
Yep.
Real fun.
Hmm.
But it's not there.
Nope. Because you had a board that stood fine.
What is the approximate time frame involved in getting this other board together?
Okay,
so
I have, actually, that's the last
one.
Okay, then I'll
appreciate
it.
I'll
work
on it. He paid her to say that. Get his back on. I've had a
call with him. I have reached out to all the citizen members, and I've got all their phone numbers, all their emails, and I asked them to give me some dates within the next 30 days that they're not going to be available, so that we can start to look at a training session. What I need to know, I guess, from the board is, do we open that up to other people other than board to sit in and listen on? Like, do we host this at the Old Town School cafeteria right there?
You're talking about the training?
Yes.
And I would say, and this is my personal opinion, why not?
Because of the crowd interruption and
well,
to me, it's just too much of a distraction, and you'll spend time spinning your wheels and wasting an hour. Next thing, to me, I just do a closed training, be done with it, and move on.
I'm thinking on that, Leon. I don't know where you stand on because I talked to you about it, but I'm thinking, you know, we've got a group of citizens. This is not going to be like fun and games. Most of us is pretty dry stuff, you know, I don't mean that ugly, but if we've got a citizen that's interested enough to get through it, wouldn't they be in a good position if something happens to one of the initial board members that we've got, they've already got some training, you can put them through a speed course and get them up and put them in that spot and keep rolling.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at one that's shaking the head, yeah. So, I'm gonna let them decide that.
Well,
they're volunteering their time for the county, and if they want other people in there to train,
we can set it up.
Then
so they don't have any questions asked. You know,
they can sit in there, but they just keep their mouth shut.
I figure if we get 100 people show up, then we might say that wasn't a good idea. You know, if we get another 4 or 5 meetings, we're not going to get another. That's what I'm saying. I'm looking at our meeting now. You know, we've got to play for it. We appreciate y'all.
I would say we need to get our volunteers trained, and then if we then we can have another workshop or whatever to train any citizens, get a list, and then and do another one for them.
Get to have the citizens
or whatever. But I mean, I would say once the volunteers, let's get them trained and get them up and going with this as quickly as possible with as least amount of distractions.
Ultimately, I think, in my opinion, the more you one is for transparency, but then when you have things in the paper, they're not freaking out because they're knowledgeable. But then it helps to, just like when we make changes, it calms everyone down. When people are interested in it, they're not going to be calling your head off and all their head. There's very few people that are interested in it, and it's way over a lot of people's head. It's a lot of times over my head. And I do have a master's degree. But if they're interested, I wouldn't take that from them. The more people that you can get interested in the county that wants to make the county great, by all means. Because it's going to be probably a flat fee. The man's going to come. You just need to come that one day. Let others come. If they get distracted, then take them out. But don't deter people to educate themselves, because this is their county, and they want to protect their county.
And then you put a cap on, maybe set it at 25 or 35,
right.
You know.
Well, you also get it to where people that are going to be on the board can interact with the trainer where the others have to do the providing requests. Write your question down, and every 30 minutes there will be a question and answer period for that. That way the people that are going to be on the board are
directed. Yeah. This is Gene Bowles again. I might add something here related to the training. The training itself generally is I do with a group of 25, 30 people, can be more, but it's drained at how do you use these tools and so forth. I have no problem at all in dealing with workshops that open it up to a much larger group, and I have no issues at all with it being something broader than just your elected and appointed officials either. But it just more or less depends on how it is conducted, and there is a little somewhat of a difference between the training sessions and how we would do that and a workshop that would generally be open to a broader set of questions and so forth.
Almost kind of like you have a stormwater task force night. You know, we advertise that, we push that, and we really get that big of a crowd. You know, and I don't think we would get a big crowd, but I also think that those that came, they're coming because they're curious, they want to learn, and they sit there and patient up and go through everything. And if they do cause a distraction, we just
have David there. No, I get what you're saying. You know, I get that 100%, and I agree with that statement 100%. But also, I know how valuable people's time is, especially when they volunteer, because I volunteer a lot too. And I just want the best. Y'all are the
best.
Y'all are the ones who stepped up. Y'all volunteered, and I don't want no distraction for y'all. I want y'all to be educated to the best of our ability with no distraction. And I do understand what you're saying. More involvement, yes, I get it. But I don't care one way or the other. That's if somebody said it a while, and Jamie might say, whatever y'all want to do, and y'all okay it through Leon, and y'all do it. I don't care. But me personally, I would not want the distraction. That's just me personally.
So
I'll just say let them make the decision.
And I agree with that.
Hey, Gene, you there? So the next question was, I guess, it goes back to legal. When we get ready to present this for the first reading, do you want to do it in a regular meeting, or do you want to do it in a special meeting?
Regular meeting.
Regular meeting.
I vote for legal to read all of it.
It'll be a little later. I got something. Some kind words.
He's pulling a lot of dollars
right there. Oh, Lord, what have I done this week?
That's all I have. I know that part of that earlier talks had questions for code enforcement. I'm prepared to answer those.
We got it.
Okay,
the public attend the hearing, not the trading, the hearing.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are the recorded meetings.
Okay, and I'm just curious about the hearing officer. He is a judge of sorts.
Most time when you say magistrate, I'll give you the legal definition. But if we have a magistrate from, in lay terms, it's an attorney that's been appointed to review the third class.
But we have a magistrate from the court.
Right. And he is basically an attorney. You know,
would it be the same magistrate?
That way it may be something that we have to discuss. That may be something that, again, this is an attorney. It's not his full-time job. If the law is for code enforcement, we have got a contract with that, I know.
Yeah.
But if we add tasks to that, I can assure you, being an attorney, I'm sure we'll have to get another contract for that.
We got one more question back here.
Didn't I hear you mention 2-3 times now that you wanted to bring up for itself RV on commercial?
You brought that up at the board meeting. I can't remember. I'd have to get back to pull those. Well, so we have several people question the ability to be able to put campgrounds in commercial districts. And I think I see what they're saying. They see, like, the big campground over behind Walmart. And our commercial zoning districts, none of them allow or have a way for campgrounds. We had a guy, you know, here in town within walking distance. His zoning is commercial. He can build a truck stop, a rest stop right there, but not a campground. He had questions about that. You have a guy in Swanee, or excuse me, you have two in Swanee, yes. They have commercial zoning, and it's been old commercial zoning, too. They're wanting to look at the possibility of putting campgrounds and not in our use. So,
if they apply for a zoning change, they can change it. They can't change
it.
It'd be easier to fix right now, honestly, while we're in the land use for that.
Okay, permitted use.
Right.
That's up to the board. If you want to make it a strictly a permitted, like, oh, you have commercial zoning, boom, you get a campground. Or if you want it as a special concession, you know.
And you can put a lot size on it, how many, basically, number 115, number 120, as you can do.
But is that
anything per... blah, blah, blah.
It's still got to come before us for a approval. That don't mean that just because they got a commercial property, they can just go put in a cap around without.
Why you put the cap on it. Kind of like down yonder.
Hang on now. Not everything comes before you for an approval. If you had a lot in Old Town at the red light right there, if Total Buck Care wanted to tear it, shot down and build a gas station right there, there's zone for gas stations like that. We would come before you. That'd be a site plan development review, and there I am.
Well, I guess my question is, if you got commercial property and you wanted to put in 100 RV parks on a piece of commercial property, if we do what talk about doing, fixing that where they can use it for RV parks, would they have to come before the board to get approval for that 100 RV park, or would they just be able to just call now that change, go in and build that RV park?
They have to come to you for a site plan approval.
Yeah. They would have to have a site plan approval on anything that they develop. But you could put it as a permitted item or a special condition, you know, as met. There's some safeguards you could put in there if you wanted them. You just said no, they got commercial, they can build a truck stop. I mean, that's up to you. That's my job is just to present it.
But if you go there and say the site plan still has to come, the site plan would not have to come before you for that gas station, right?
Oh, yeah, it comes.
No, they would have to come before you for a site plan approval.
Before the board.
Yes.
Before the commissioners. It doesn't have to come before the commissioners.
It just goes to your office, to the building for permitting, correct?
Documentation.
That's why I said if you put a cap on a number, 2015.
Yeah, what he's saying, though, is like they would present a site development plan, and then it would give review.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I mean? But
not just by your office.
I just kind of need to know... which way you, if you want me to explore adding that to the uses of commercial zoning districts.
I don't want to, this is me talking, and I'm only one commissioner, but I don't want Mark Hatch to be able to go and buy 100 or 50 acres and just put 150 RV slots in. I don't want that.
Right.
But there again, if Mark Hatch has, commercial property that's X amount of acres, should be able to do X amount. It's the same thing we got into down at Piddler's. You remember Piddler's? We actually cut 75 slots off of him.
Mm-hmm. So I think what I'm hearing from you is look at ways to do this and the ways that it can be still
regulated?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and I think, to me, I think that's the smartest way to do it. And then they actually still have some use of their property, and without...
Hey, you know, camping now versus what we camp when I was little is apparently totally different, because I never thought camping in the parking lot was camping.
That's just my opinion.
Okay. Is there any other questions for me?
Happy anniversary.
Thank you.
I do got one.
Yeah.
You're not going to be here for the special exception, right? Yeah, your RV exception, when they get the granted RV exception, what exactly are they allowed to have on the property other than the RV?
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up.
Hey, so
we actually just went through that.
Mr. Gene, did you have any other questions for us before we...
No, I don't think so. Yeah, I think you've given us direction that we need to answer the questions we put for you. It's been a little hard for me to understand all the conversation that was going on, but I hope it was helpful.
Yes, it was. I'll reach out to you in the morning time.
Yeah.
All right.
Good. I'll hang up then, and we'll talk in the morning and kind of recap what we have. All right. Thank you.
Go ahead, because I'm...
So, when they get the RV special exception, they're allowed to have 120 square foot storage shed, and they can come in and permit pole barn, open pole barn. They can't have any enclosed pole barns or anything like that to park their camper underneath. It's very limited. I mean, that's it. 60-amp power pole, anywhere other than 20, they have grinder pumps. There's two in Gina that have grinder pumps. That's new.
They go to 100. That's
yep,
it.
They go to 100, and they're identified. It's camping.
But I was driving around checking on some that I got coming up. I got one that's already got two sheds.
Oh, yeah.
Already on the property.
So I know which one that is. That is turned by the Higgins also.
Right there by where we got the big junk thing at the
code
enforcement case.
Oh, your junk yard?
Huh?
Your junkyard?
My junkyard, yep.
So,
I offered to clean that up, but then Shane advised me that wasn't a good idea.
Yeah, it'd just be more brought in the back. And just...
But, now, did you get your answer? Cause
I ain't got it yet. I mean, there's...
So she, I know the lady. She come in and talked to us. She actually purchased a set of plans online to build a house and was unaware that they got to be Florida engineered. So the plans she followed was not good enough. So she's having to go and get them re-engineered, but wherever she lives, she does something with Lockyer Engineering, and she's going to be building and moving here, but she's on a timeline. She has to get gone from where she's at. So her idea was to pull her house plan, or permit her house, live in her camper while the house is being built. Sad story, but she's running to, like, aggravation. Just from not being in the area and possibly hiring their own people to help her. And so now she's come down to, she can't get her plans permitted, she can't do this, her only option is that. We're aware of it, she knows it. Not a perfect situation, but she'll be house permit here with an approach. I'm aware of it, it's just, not perfect.
Good. Now, going back to kind of what Jody got into with someone pulling a camper on a piece of property. This past week, we run into that out there to where it actually is square footage. So a camper fell within the square footage, but what they pulled in was a mobile home, single wide mobile home. They pulled that baby right on in there with a van, I believe.
Oh, it's a van. Spray painted wide load.
Yeah, spray painted wide load on it.
But
so.
y'all laughed, and I feel really bad for the neighbors because it's turning into quite the nightmare.
It is, and it's in District 3.
And
yes.
So
I'm getting educated.
So now we met with the property owners
first night, or the morning after they got here, we met.
3 o'clock in the morning?
No.
No.
At about 9:30 we met with them. And this is funny to us because we got the phone call, but GPS got them lost and they drove around somebody's yard.
At 3 a.m., and
there's probably 10 people in the county that I would vote not to go in their yard at 3 a.m.
That's
one of them.
That's the main one. That's the main one.
And so we got a bunch of phone calls, sheriff's office phone calls, and we went out there and, you know, and I said, we'll see you now. And the initial contact wasn't for conflict, you know. And we explained to them, whatever, and we explained all the rules. We sat out here and we talked with them on the edge of the road, explained everything to them. We told them that this property flooded, and we told them everything about it because they had never been here. They bought this property sight unseen and came here from somewhere down south. But they knew all the rules, and then lo and behold, they have drove in this, I'm talking about a pristine 70s model single car. It's,
what color is it?
Yeah. It's not that one.
It ain't the one we hunt?
Kind of moldy?
Dang. So it's still up there in my district.
So we went out there and we flagged it.
District 2 ain't got no
name. Now, this is a floodplain violation. This is a, you know, building code violation. This is a whole bunch of violations. And this is one of the ones, like we talked about previously. He has an excess load right now of code enforcement cases that need to be brought forward. And,
But I mean, now we're just like with all these other campers out on the property, you ain't got to go through all those.
But it's illegal because, go back to the square footage.
So it exceeds, they can't say that that's storage. Can't say that, you know, because we don't permit accessory structures without a primary residence. So that's a non-permitted structure there. And that's not a parked vehicle with a tag. That's not whatever they want to say it is. Not. It didn't have a pre-inspection. It shouldn't be allowed in the county.
Over 300 square feet, is that what?
Oh, it's over that.
I mean, but ain't that the threshold?
Yeah. I don't remember what the
threshold. A non-permitted structure?
Well, you missed something too, because he goes back to there in a flood zone. Anything would have been permitted. Even the 300 square foot shed would, anything would have been permitted. So now, we're going, these people are buying this property on contract. We're going to tie up some legal monies in this, and I know what they'll do. They'll abandon the project and go, they'll go on. And
they'll invest in the building.
Yeah, the original property owner's going to end up probably eating this. But it's one of the things, like we made contact with them the first day because there was already allegations that they were going to do wrong. There was nothing happening there. So we could go and talk to them. They stated that they understood the rules. They were here to comply.
You talk to them on the phone.
Yeah, you talk to them. Yeah.
So, you listened.
But my point in being is there, what you run into was probably, we couldn't say anything because we always say that we can put whatever you want on your property, which you can, but you can't. That there exceeds the square footage. Where you was at, it probably did not exceed the square footage.
Well,
so we got
to most hit in the highway as they're trying to get to.
Well, that's what I'm saying, but that's something that we do have in place, and Leon informed me of that, is that exceeds the accessory shed storage that they all using on us. Everyone's using that on us. And honestly, I was under the same impression until this come up that I was like, hey, wait a minute. I didn't think about square footage. So that's something that we can use in our arsenal whenever we get in situations that you got into and what I'm in. We already have something in place.
We have.
Yes.
And one of the things I think Leon said that was really important too is 73% of our community, if we want to do anything on our property, we have to have a permit. It don't matter if it's 300 square foot.
It doesn't.
If it's in a floodplain,
you got to have a permit.
If it's a span size, I've got to have a permit to do it.
Fully grass the far-reaching power of FEMA. During our last CAV visit, they took pictures of trees being cut down and want to know, did they have a permit? Mm-hmm. And we had to go in there and tell them, no, we ordered them to clean that up. You know, and that was in Swanee. It was right there.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
I know.
Well,
I'm not good at it.
So, it's easy for them to hit 20. That's the thing. They can ride down the road and hit 100 houses real fast, real quick, versus riding around in a hammock, you know. But now they will.
Oh, yeah.
And,
but just to reiterate what, because we did talk about this in our last board meeting, too, and then lo and behold, I got hit with this in between it. And I was like, my mindset was, it's their property. We can't stop them from storing something on their property. But really, we can. There's really something, and China hit the nail on the head, too. 73% of our county, you can't put nothing on it to begin with. So maybe it's our train of thought that we really need to change that train of thought that we have. Or Mark did. Mark needed to change it. So this opened my eyes this past week, because the whole time I was telling them, I said, you know, we can't stop them from putting this single wide on their property. And Leon said, oh, yes, we can. I said, tell me how. And he explained it to me, and it makes perfectly good sense.
Yeah, they can't say that's for sure. They can't, you know, don't get me wrong, people, they love trying to break the rules, but it goes back to, I've said it 100 times.
Yep.
I mean, what's the point in the rule of the job? Compliance sometimes is ugly. You know, it puts you in a bad spot. So that's why I say use the hearing officers, use the tools, it gives you that barrier right there, and it allows them to do their job.
Good. You need to go eat.
Yeah.
You had said, I think, a meeting or two ago that there's a county, and I don't even know which one, that has eliminated special exceptions for RVs.
They're working on it right now.
And how do we do that?
We don't.
No.
Our coastline, we would.
Whenever you get a special exception, like this lady I was talking about, she still has to get a special exception to live in an RV while she builds her house. What happens when she gets her CO for her house? What happens to that special exceptions for that RV?
We
don't grant one.
Yeah. So she'll get a 60-amp power pole and
get
ready to transition it from camper to house. We just need that pole and hook up the house.
But as long as they have the building permit, they today can go do exactly what he's talking about. And Jody's brought that up multiple times. And actually, we've had some people pull them because they didn't realize.
If you pull in a building permit, you don't even have to get a special.
But what if, but I'm saying, you got a special exception, then you decide to build a house.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you've already got a special exception.
We've had several of them over the years that, especially what you're seeing now, is we've had three. Because they're going to get charged the $300 from us. They're getting charged their special assessment and then whatever property value tax they have. So we looked at one where they're paying over $700 in taxes, whereas if they were homesteaded with a resident, their tax would be way cheaper. And so they went and found a small single wide, and they permitted it, and they take that off, and we removed them from the list.
With the rebuilding, that what you're talking about, it actually is cleaning that up, because I know we've had a couple in Swanee that had them on there. Leon Stone Renewal said, I got a house, I don't want this. So don't pay the $300 plus the when we add the assessment to it. So.
Well, here's another thing to look at, though. But if I'm renting my RV out for $300 a weekend.
Yeah. Not legal.
I know it is, but I'm
okay,
not have the special exception. I'm building my house now, and so I'm renting my RV.
But you don't have the special exception. The only reason
takes it away once you build the house and it's CO.
Correct. Yeah. Right.
Okay, that's
yes.
We don't have a way of permitting a house in a camper. Thank you, property. So if you see those, obviously when we call them, they say, "Oh, no, that's my camper. This is part of how we run the mold from growing in there." You know that. They, that's what they tell us. But if we get, you know, legitimate reason to suspect that, yeah, now you're violating, you know, just whatever Steve or his task of mailing in a letter and going down that, added to his caseload. And don't get me wrong, you know, we had a commissioner open meeting to say that they're exactly about the same type of situation right there. And I don't know why. They always stick them right there in the front yard where it's a visual.
Going back, because I just want to get this out there. I mean, everybody should be able to do, they pay taxes, they buy property what they want to. And I don't want us as a board and the citizens, if you think about it, get misconstrued somewhat on it. The people that are applying for the RV special exceptions and doing it right, they're not creating a problem. It's the illegal ones that we have the problems with. None of the ones that's going through all these processes, doing all the permitting the correct way, we're having a problem with. Maybe 5% or less, but I mean, most of all the ones that's making the RV deal a bad deal, making everything look bad, it's all the illegal ones that Steve's having hell trying to get removed from the property. So, and the people that's doing it right is getting beat up,
hammered
over something they have no control over. So, I just like to put that out.
You touched on something right here, because it's a two-part problem. It's a drug problem as much as it is a legal problem.
And a homeless problem.
And we can fix the property problem. We can foreclose on it. We can go in there and clean it up. And that's what happened in Old Town behind the Methodist Church. Is that person was ran off from another place, and lo and behold, he kicked it in another gear when he got there.
I hang up, throwing that up. Every time we move them, they just go somewhere else to start again.
We don't have. They run water line, electric line from their house to the other lot, and then put campers on there, rent them out, whatever.
Time in. They're illegal. You tell me who it is, I'm going to take it as a verbal complaint and give it to Leon.
You tell
me. The neighbor that I had a problem with about this little shed property, I bought on the tax deed and all that.
Didn't we fix that where you ain't got that?
No, you just tell me, okay. And I'll fix it.
Wait, one more.
That is going to be it.
Before you go, I just want to say this. The building, the zoning office is being run the best it has ever been. I think everybody in here can admit that. Leon is an asset to this county, and I hope that y'all will not let him leave here.
Right. We can't lose it.
Yep. I appreciate it. I really do. I think.
Leon's going to be broke. He's going to be bored to go to his lunch tonight because he's already had
his voice is going to get about it.
The only thing that I've told everybody about is the one that we get tabled, so he's going to read them tonight. If you have any questions, just table.
Okay. Happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary. Motion to adjourn. We got a motion and second. We got a motion, Mr. Hatch, second, Mr. Feast, and all in favor. Aye.
They
call
that for enforcement.
He's going to do it tonight.